going to share with you a reading from Mary Gordon. She's the founder and president of Roots of Empathy. It's a beautiful, powerful training program for children. She stated, "In the abuse of power, be it bullying in childhood, domestic violence in the home, bullying in the workplace or on the world stage, the absence of empathy is a common denominator." She continues, "When children develop empathy, they help more and hurt less. The leaders of tomorrow are sitting in the classrooms of today, and they need imagination and empathy to be able to identify and solve society's problems." Most of us, all of us, have probably read To Kill a Mockingbird, and Harper Lee says, "You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view, until you climb inside his skin and walk around in it." Now, join with me as I use personal narrative to take us toward discovering the intentionality of empathy as the essence of change and growth. Anyone, each of you, can do the same with your personal narrative following where you've been and where you are now. I was born and grew up in Murfreesboro, North Carolina, a small town about 90 miles from here, from right here, from 3051 Ironbound Road. The motto of my state is Esse Quam Videri, to be rather than to seem. Now each day I'm guided by the message. It influenced me and helps me through life. According to my mom and others, my birth process started just before midnight on Thanksgiving Day on the kitchen table in the rented house on William Street in Murfreesboro. You can picture that, I'm sure. I emerged on Friday, November the 25th, 1938. Flash forward to 1954. When I was a sophomore in high school, my dad had died when I was 5, and my mom married my pop, William Benjamin Gordon, on Christmas Day of 1954. Brown versus the Board of Education had become law on May the 17th, 1954. And my pop and Roland Pruitt, my minister, my home church, helped me understand the decision and why it was needed. So did James Skeeter Brown and Junior Ruffin, two of my African-American playmates who lived in town but had to go to school in the county. Skeeter and Junior influenced me in understanding why they were supporting Brown and in feeling as if I were experiencing what they were experiencing in segregated schools. I felt what they felt. They changed me. I remember my social studies teacher, I've forgotten his name intentionally, was not pleased with the Brown decision and is asking, "How many of you want colored children to come to our school?" I said, "I did," and was sent to the principal. Yes, I was. I was influenced by that teacher and principal. You bet. I discovered how they felt. They changed my perception of white authority, and I told them so. So began my trek of being true to Esse Quam Videri, to be rather than to seem, and the reinforcement of my commitment to human and civil rights. I graduated Wake Forest College in 1961 as a religion and philosophy major and entered seminary. While at Wake, Unitarians and Universalists became officially UUs on May 21, 1961. At Wake, G. McLeod Bryant, my ethics professor, told us to get out our Geiger counters. Some of you might know what it is, but I have a feeling most of us do. To unearth and discover the beauty of others and get involved in human and civil rights. He influenced me significantly. I remember being involved in demonstrating for the desegregation of Wake Forest College and for the rights of African Americans to have full access to Woolworths in Greensboro. Also, Dr. Bryan introduced me to John Hays Holmes and other Unitarian ministers, to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., to to Carl Rogers, to Gandhi. He helped me know how to feel as if I were they, so their experiences, needs, values, feelings could change me, if I permitted. And I did. I went to seminary because I wanted to become prepared to help the white institutional church accept the commitment to civil rights as evidenced by African American churches. I wanted the degree credential, not ordination. I got it. In afterthought, I was a budding UU because I entered seminary as an agnostic, hoping to become an atheist, and I did. At seminary, I convinced a couple of friends to go to Washington, D.C. on August 28, 1963 for the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. I knew about Dr. Martin Luther King and his commitment to human and civil rights. I had to see him. I had to see him and be a part of the demonstration. I stood about halfway between the reflection pool and the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and looked up into the face of Dr. King. What I remember most was his powerful statement about the fierce urgency of now, that existential moment. As I looked at him and listened closely to his words, I understood his charge and what I must do to respond. It was as if I were he. He changed me. In my Master of Education work, finished in 70, at the College of William and Mary, I began to look more closely at the work of Carl Rogers and George Holmans. He wrote The Human Group, and many others, and trying to construct my role as a public school principal in helping African Americans and Anglo-Euro-American parents, students, teachers, and community understand and accept each other. I was a principal in Middlesex, 67 to 71, and the schools were preparing to desegregate fully in 1969. Freedom of choice as the strategy to desegregate public schools was outlawed by the Supreme Court decision, Green versus the County Board of New Kent County, on May 27, 1968. So I constructed my graduate project. It was entitled The Administrator, the Principal, Interaction, and Integration: How School Principals Can Use Small Groups to Help Folk Understand and Accept Each Other. I needed a system, functions, and processes to take folk from the moment of seeing each other for the first time to where acceptance of each other could happen. I needed an environment where folk could come together, see each other, and begin to communicate. George Holmes in his writing about George Holmans in the writing about the human group called interaction the essential component to get folk to share their needs, values, and feelings, and to listen to the needs, values, and feelings of others, to share their life experiences. I remembered Carl Rogers' work on empathy and believed his stating that the state of empathy, of being empathic, is to perceive the internal frame of reference of another with accuracy and with the emotional components and meanings which pertain thereto as if one were that other person. That was the process I was seeking. I knew that Rogers had a caveat that sounded to me like the potential for conflict, but was really the outcome I was seeking. He said, if I am truly open to the way life is experienced by another person, if I can take his world into mine, then I run the risk of seeing life in his way, of being changed myself. And we all resist change. So I developed the TAICE system, T-A-I-C-E. I was told it was one of the reasons I was hired by the Virginia Department of Education in 1971 as the first supervisor of school desegregation services. TAICE became one of the primary training modalities we use to work in human and race relations with the public schools in the Commonwealth. I still practice the TAICE system today when folk get serious about wanting to create empathic environments for self and organizational change. In your bulletin, there's a handout. Listen, all yours. You can take it home. Let me go. Let me introduce you to this. We'll spend a few minutes with it. Earlier, you heard me talking to the students about RACH, race or region, age, sex, gender identity, expression, and age, handicap, or disability. When we look at the TACE, see the T-A-I-C-E, start at the very, very bottom there, at that E. Remember we've heard and I've said about the first moment when people see each other? That's exposure. And that's when we see the rash. That's when we discover race or region, age, sex or gender, and handicap or disability. Now, you and I know, and I didn't mention that to the beautiful children, that we now have laws, and we still have now, laws that protect those four classes of individuals. We're hoping that they continue to be. Now, from that exposure, that E, we begin to communicate with folks. We begin to talk about the weather. How's your dog? I understand you got a new car. In my case, I'd probably say, you know that Dawn, D-A-W-N, the liquid that you wash dishes, it really works. Things that are not, they're surface types of things. But where the joy happens, where the potential for change happens, is with I. Remember what Homer said? He said that interaction. He said that it's that moment when we begin to discover the self by sharing parts and pieces of ourselves. If you will, look at the two circles. See the two circles? Put yourself in self. Think about another person in the other. In here, there are your needs, your values, your feelings. They're the things that cause you to be. They're the things that are who you are. Also there are your past experiences. Family. I shared with you a number of my past experiences. Didn't know them. Wanted to share them with you. But also future expectations. One of the future expectations I had that I did not share with you today, I wanted to go to get a doctorate and I did. I went to Virginia Tech. But right here, as we are beginning to move from simple exposure to communication and begin to interact with others, that's when there is the potential for change. That is the potential that as if I were you. And then we move, when that happens, we move into the A, which is acceptance. We have found a common ground, a point of acceptance of each other. But as we move to the T, that's where the change potential comes. That's where the possibility of some resistance might happen. That's when a need, a value, a feeling of yours becomes a part of who I am. That's when a need, a value, a feeling of you, it becomes a part of who I am. It becomes John Whitley. But sometimes folk don't want that to happen. They get all the way up to acceptance and it stops. That's TACE. Exposure, communication, interaction, acceptance, and transformation. That's the change. Okay, let me share with you some other thoughts. We need to remember that organizations, whatever their configuration, business, religious, school, military, and government, nonprofit, are living, breathing organisms. They have a defined culture and clearly stated strategies related to that vision and mission, and strategies on how to maintain that culture. They can be empathic environments wherein they are open to discover the needs, values, feelings of others, and create responsive and inclusive support systems. But some organizations, even when they want to be empathic and display inviting messages, might never become empathic environments in which they are changed by the life experiences of others. They are resistant to change. In permitting the needs, values, and feelings, past and experiences of others to influence, to change their organization, their culture, their people. Especially if others are African American, then unfortunately the lens of slavery, seeing property, not people, to which Anglo-Euro-Americans see African Americans, too often creates the barrier to change. When they are open to being changed by others, they will be able to see, communicate, interact, accept, and transform themselves and their organization. There are many other factors of resistance. One just mentioned most often is prevalent. Recently, I was asked by a couple of nonprofit groups how they can get more people of color, get that often, how can get more people of color to attend their meetings. My immediate response was, sometimes it's, why are you asking me? But then I become more compassionate. And I ask, are you and your organization ready to be influenced by others? When you are, I welcome working with you for change and for growth. Then I share my, as if I were you, belief and describe the TAE system, exposure, communication, interaction. Thank you. Be still. And of course, I talk about their rash. I also recommend they're getting involved with organizations and groups wherein they can change and grow as an individual. I share a list of some places I intentionally have become involved and through which I can increase my understanding and acceptance of self and others and become transformed by them. I do list, absolutely, Williamsburg Unitarian Universalist. I list the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, the Poor People's Campaign, led by Bishop William J. Barber II. I mentioned the James City, Williamsburg branch of the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the LGBT Caucus of the Virginia Democratic Party, the Peninsula Agency on Aging. All together, the Tidewater Cluster Meeting coming up on August the 12th, the Unitarian Universalist Legislative Ministry of Virginia, American Atheists, and Black Lives Matter. Here at WUU, we have a Living the Pledge proclamation signed and posted in our narthex. And in room 108, we've hung the continuum as a reminder, whenever we're in that room, of where we rank on becoming anti-racist and multicultural organization. Out front, we have our Black Lives Matter banner and our welcoming rainbow flag. I feel pretty cool. I was integral in some of those objects coming forward as statements of commitment of our organization. On the books, we are a welcoming congregation and a green sanctuary. I feel all of these outward expressions are rash. In other words, they are the visible symbols of our internal being. They are our inner beauty. They are what we show every day to every single person. They are what makes us so uniquely special. They are our badges of identity. They are created to show empathy intentionally. They are to be celebrated with love and joy and peace. But they are only symbols of outward expressions. Reaching out to each other and discovering our rash is the beginning of understanding. Is WU willing to discover the needs, values, and feelings and life experiences of others and permit them to influence and change who WUU is personally and organizationally? Can WUU open to gentle, angry people who feel, as James Baldwin, when he wrote, to be a Negro in this country and to be relatively conscious is to be enraged almost all the time. So that the first problem is how to control that rage so it won't destroy you. Part of the rage is this: it isn't only happening to you, but it's what's happening all around you all the time in the face of the most extraordinary and criminal indifference, the indifference and ignorance of most white people in this country. Or can WU open to gentle, angry folk who feel as Andre Lorde when she said, "Every woman has a well-stocked arsenal of anger, potentially useful against those oppressions, personal and institutional, which brought that anger into being. Focused with precision, it can become a powerful source of energy, serving progress and change. Anger expressed and translated into action in the service of our vision and our future is a liberating and strengthening act of clarification." James Baldwin was African American. He was gay, he was a poet, probably one of the most brilliant folk to come along. Andre Lorde, she's African American, lesbian, brilliant writer, extensive works. Lastly, can WUU open to gentle, angry folk who feel as John Whitley, who says, "My balance is to keep gentle and angry in healthy juxtaposition. I have low tolerance for ambiguity and arrogance. I have no tolerance for injustice toward people, other creatures, and Mother Earth. Peace and love guide my engagement most of the time. Hope fills my being and creates within me the fierce urgency of now, the fire in my belly all the time. I am a feminist, left-wing, radical, socialist, Democrat, human civil rights activist, and an atheist. I believe WUU can." Let's end up where I started this message: John Haynes Holmes and his commitment to Universal Church. I believe John Haynes Holmes, Unitarian minister, would want WUU to become a universal community congregation, as he did with the Community Church of New York City. He was a lead founder of the NAACP and the ACLU. I believe WUU is positioned to become influenced and changed by the presence and inclusion of African Americans and other folk. I believe WU is positioned to be transformed to be rather than to seem, and to proclaim as if I were you as our beacon and as our message. May it be so.